It's time to step inside the Iketagon with your host, Ike Feldman.
What is up, fight fans? What is up, boxing fans, mixed martial arts, kickboxing fans, BJJ fans, Olympic martial art fans, anything you guys are into? What is up, combat sports community? It is your boy, your brother-in-arms, Isaac Ike Feldman, with my brother-in-arms, the best duo in combat sports podcasting, the best-looking duo in combat sports podcasting. Hide your moms, hide your wives. Francisco and Ike are back at it. My main man, Francisco Guzman of MMA Mundial and Mukanda and Boxeo Mundial. Francisco, we will find you on Twitter. Maybe we can go over some Twitter handles as this show goes on, the Twitter Live goes on. But first and foremost, it's always great talking to you, man. We obviously talk a lot more than the audience will see, but now we're doing it live.
For sure.
How's everything, man? Good, man.
Trying to stay cool in this hot, muggy, humid weather we have here in New York, you know?
You're always cool, man. You're like a polar bear, man. It's hard to melt you, man. You are always cool, cool customer. It makes sense. I will always pay respect to those that have stepped into the ring of combat or the cage of combat. And you, my friend, while you were eating, I think it was tuna tartars, you were showing me some beautiful, like, dips and Mike Tyson, like, boxing. You are talented, man, and knowledgeable, and I respect it.
Thank you.
Give us a story of your boxing background.
Well, my boxing background was pretty much an accident. I'm serious, because when I first started boxing, I was always interested in boxing since I was a kid. But I never really went to a boxing gym till I was like in my early 20s. And I met a friend of mine in Schenectady, New York. He was actually a professional boxer, and he brought me into the gym. I got my taste of actually sparring. And, you know, when you get hit in the nose pretty hard, you start to realize this ain't a joke. You realize how much discipline it takes for fighters to be in the kind of shape they're in. So I did it as a way of just being good. I never really tried, you know, really wanted to compete at all. But, you know, the Golden Gloves was always around there, and they were like, kept asking me if I wanted to compete. And one year I said, all right, I'll do it, you know. I competed in the Golden Gloves maybe 2 years.
Wow.
2 years in a row. Yeah.
Respect, man. Respect.
One of the hardest amateur competitions in New York, you know. So it's no longer called it's no longer called Golden Gloves
Ring
anymore.
Ringmasters?
Ringmasters, right.
But
yeah.
Question then. Do they hand you the necklaces still?
I don't know. I believe they still do. I'm not sure. I haven't been to those fights in a long time.
My boy won, he was the Silver Gloves, Mr. Benny Baez, maybe a decade ago. He was walking around the college campus with the Silver Gloves. I go, what the hell are those? He goes, you know those 4 miles a day I've been running and that I've been going to White Plains to train? It was all – and he goes, oh, my fight's on YouTube. I go, you fought at MSG? I was like, you're so modest.
Yeah, you
fight
at the theater. Yeah. They put you in the theater, yeah.
Unbelievable, man. It's remarkable. I don't know if my career is trending towards covering more amateur shows because it's more of like the love of the game because – dude, we are in an era where it's like we're post Conor McGregor. I mean, I'm sorry, folks. Breaking news, fanboys. Conor McGregor is not in his prime. If you missed 2015 and 16, maybe even 14 with the Holloway-Poirier fights, you guys missed out because now you have the drunk whiskey salesman who's getting all these allegations, getting chased by lawyers left and right.
Man, it's crazy.
I respect the amateurs because there's no pomp and circumstance. There's not as much bells and whistles. That's why I loved how the Olympic Committee, they kind of put the heat under the boxing to get their stuff together to kind of like – I don't think they'll ever fully push out corruption, but they want it to be as prestigious.
I will say this much about the amateurs, though. The amateurs is not scripted. Like, let's say boxing, it's when you turn pro, you can pick and choose your opponents. In the amateurs, it's not that easy to pick opponents. Sometimes you don't know who you're fighting, you know. So when you see those guys that have like 50 to 100 fights, those guys are really good.
Yeah. And people, I think, need to give Jake Paul a little more credit, because when I was going through Ryan Garcia's record in the lead up to Davis Garcia, and I saw some guy that was 3-12, another guy was like 4-10, I'm like, that's part of the game. And it's just that Jake Paul is on such a platform now that everybody wants to rip him apart. But what we are not going to rip apart, but what we are going to dissect, is UFC 290. There's obviously a huge boxing fight that took a minute to get situated, which is the Crawford Spence later this month. Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou. Oh my God, I'll believe it when those two actually step into the same ring. That's going to be incredible. Maybe it'll be on like a cruise ship with a bunch of sheiks in the front rows, because I heard that was a rumor with Joshua Fury years ago. But we also have John Jones, Stipe Miocic, and whatever else Francisco and I are going to talk about. But first, Francisco, what is your biggest takeaway when looking back at UFC 290?
Volkanovski, man. I told you.
Oh, yeah. You were right. You were right. Yes. Let me set the bed here, or make the table, whatever you want me to say. I'm giving you credit, man. You said this guy's on that Jordan level. He's just in that zone. And I was like, I don't know. Yair's dangerous. He's got cardio. He's got weapons. Dude, you were completely right about that. So credit to you.
Yeah. Volkanovski is at that place right now. Where GSP was at, John Jones was at, Anderson Silva was at. When those guys were in their prime, in their peak, they were super hard to beat. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, John Jones still hasn't lost. And GSP, of course, never lost. So when you look at those guys when they were in their prime, they just had everything. You know, and when they peaked as a fighter, you had to have the same coming in. And Yair, you know, he, of course, shown some nuances in his game, very unorthodox and pretty quick. But Volkanovski showed that, you know, there's levels to this game. And he's at a level where I think he's just a level above everybody else.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to be that dominating. And Volkanovski is one of the most frequent champs that we have in UFC and in all of MMA. But just, man, I was thinking, I was like, come on. The Frankie Edgar, Yair Rodriguez fight was 5-6 years ago, where he swarmed him, ground and pound, dominating. I do have to say, though, when looking back, there was a headbutt from that freaking thick-skulled New Zealand, or maybe he's from Australia, that SOB with he headbutted him. But I mean, all is fair in love and war and fighting, and my goodness, it might have taken something away from Yair in that. But
I'm gonna say, you know what, what took it away? Volkanovski's physicality. He's a strong dude. You saw how he went against Islam, right? He moved up weight classes and still showed that he was strong enough to deal with the bigger guys, right? So this guy is a tank. You understand? Not only is he a good striker, but he's a tank. So Yair just wasn't physically strong enough to deal with that kind of pressure.
No, it looked like a big brother and a little brother. And again, you have your thinking cap on. I overlooked the strength that was used against Islam. It's like, duh, you know, he's facing this Dagestani legendary strength, and he was competitive with Islam for 5 rounds. Why wouldn't he be, like, able to manhandle and ragdoll somebody like Yair's build? And, you know, nothing against Yair. You know, he's going to be back. Maybe he wins a title if he waits long enough till Volkanovski retires or go up to 155. He's young enough. He doesn't have that many miles. He's spaced out many fights. Maybe he could win a title. But as you said, man, he is in that upper echelon zone right now for his career. So respect to Volk.
Well, we have Ilio Topura, right? Isn't it?
Yes. You sent me some really cool, and if you know the guy's handle, throw it out there. But you sent me a really cool, what would it be, like a video package that this guy threw together with like some Spanish music, some sexy Spanish music. It was like Zorro was coming in to fight with the Gladiator and Volkanovski. And you know what, man? Again, I love Volkanovski, okay? I'm a big fan of him. I really am. People think it's like I'm a big fan of him. But it's like now I look at Topuria, he's more hungry. He's undefeated. He's very similar build as Volkanovski. And just when is the king going to be fat on the throne? So, yeah, you say Topuria, I think I'm on the record of telling Volkanovski I keep picking against you. He's like, oh, I might keep picking against me.
Yeah.
I picked the zombie against Volkanovski.
It's hard to bet against him right now, you know, only because, he does a lot of things really good. And he's at that peak. Topuria could be a threat, you know. I mean, he looks like it. But once you get in there and you see them both together, you see the reason why Volkanovski's where he's at, you know. So, and I would say this much. In my opinion, when he beat Max Holloway the first time, he got that win legitimate. The second time, I thought he lost. I thought it was a very close fight, but I thought he lost. But in that third fight, it's just like he got better and better and better. And he was fighting the best guy in the division. Max Holloway was the best in that division. And he just got better. And in that third fight, he totally smashed him. He totally showed why he's the best at that division, you know?
Great point.
Since then, I don't think that he's gone a backward step. So, yeah.
Dude, he lost to – I don't even know who he lost to years ago. But he undefeated in the UFC featherweight division. He's taken out all the top contenders, Brian Ortega, Max Holloway, Yair Rodriguez, Korean Zombie. Is all that's left is a rematch with Islam, or are we going to wait for Topuria to make a statement, or is that just a fight?
He wants that rematch. He actually voiced that in the press conference. He wants that rematch. I know he felt that he won. A lot of people did feel that he won, too. I didn't think so, but I thought it was super close. I mean, I thought he was going to get washed. I was boy, did I eat crow. I mean, Volkanovski showed me. That was one fight that I did bet against him, and yes, he did lose, but he won in a lot of people's eyes, regardless of the loss or not. You know?
And that's another reason why I respect you. And guys, the topic we have is combat sports media. Very, very broad topic, but it should be fun to play around with. That's another reason why I respect you, is that you can say that you ate crow on picking a fight or how you expected a fight to go. A lot of these people will try to, like, weave their words that they were never wrong. I've heard the same thing with gamblers, and it's like, man, it's like at some point, it's like you're allowed to be wrong. We're all human. Like we're humans trying to predict what humans are going to do. It's okay if you're wrong. But we'll get into our favorite.
But, you know, when you in a fighter's mind, or when you look at these fights, right, what you kind of do when you pick these fights, when I pick these fights, right, I pick these fights according to their best attributes. And then I kind of put them together, try it mentally. And I say, well, you know, this guy does this really well, and that guy does this really well. What would the outcome be, right? That's how kind of I pick fights. I mean, for the most part, I'm right, but when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I mean, like, you know, we can't always be right, you know? So.
Well, this is where I'm going to lean on you heavily next, because we have a huge match. Am I going to screw this up? It is welterweight. Is Crawford Spence welterweight? Spoiler alert.
Yes.
Okay, it is.
Yes.
I'm learning, people. I'm learning. Yeah. 147
for the undisputed title.
Undisputed title. Is it 147.5? Is there a 0.5 in there, or is it just 147?
Nah, it's 147.
All right, I'm making up weight classes. But at the end of this one, and I'm going to lean on you heavily here, man, because paint the picture, explain to me and the audience why we need to see this fight. And again, guys, we are trying to get Francisco. We are efforting Francisco to get a Twitter. If you got, he's
best. I promise. I've been saying that for a long time. I will.
You actually box, man. Frankie Knuckles makes a lot of sense. Makes complete sense. You are the man. You are the Francisco Goose man. So I do appreciate your time for jumping on the Iktagon. And again, man, if you have a podcast or anything you want me to jump on, extremely gracious and courteous with your time. I do appreciate it. And I will use your pick and your knowledge for the July 29th Crawford-Spence fight. Let me know who's going to win, how they're going to win, how you break this down. Dude, the floor is yours. The floor is yours.
That is a tough one, man. This is like one of the – these are – this fight is compared to like Leonard Hearns, you know.
Wow.
That's how competitive this fight is. No one truly knows. I mean, we all have our picks, right? Just like anybody else. But a lot of people are on the fence. I mean, you got two guys who haven't lost. You have two guys who just been beating everybody up, right? So who do you pick? Now, I will say this much. When Crawford first moved up to welterweight, I didn't give him a chance in hell. To me, Spence was too big, too strong, you know, a rough, rugged southpaw, you know? But as Crawford began fighting, you know, Benavidez, he fought Benavidez, where he knocked him out in the 12th round. He fought Amir Khan, which was pretty much a wash. He fought Kell Brook. I mean, he's had fights. He hasn't really fought the opposition that Spence has fought. Spence kind of beat everybody to get all three belts. But Crawford just took what he could. You know what I'm saying? But when Crawford fought Porter, it was a perfect measuring stick. Because Porter had fought Spence. Lost to Spence on a real close decision where he was knocked down, I believe was the 10th round? 10th or 11th round he was knocked down?
Yes.
I believe so. And but it was a close fight. Now Crawford comes in there and fights Porter. Porter, of course, was very competitive in that fight too. But one thing I saw about Crawford against Porter was that Crawford, you know, made the fight a little different. Porter tried to fight his fight, but even Porter said it in his podcast that every time he tried to fight his fight, Crawford was ready to stop it. And it made it more difficult for him. But if you look at the ninth round? No, I can't remember what round he knocked him out. I think it was the 10th that he stopped Porter. But when they told him in his corner that he was losing, he said, that he was like behind or was close or whatever. He got up immediately and knocked Porter down. Not once, but twice. And it looked like he was on his way to stopping Porter before his father jumped in and stopped that fight. So he did something in that fight that nobody had done to Porter. Porter had never been stopped. He's been knocked down, but he's never been stopped. There was other situations that I thought that Crawford was going to be competitive, but that solidified it for me that this fight is going to be, to me, I started to lean towards Crawford, you know? And, you know, you got Spence who's had a car accident. You know, he came back and beat Danny Garcia, which was a great win for him coming from a situation like that. Then he had a detached retina. He comes back and he beats Ugas. He stops him, a Cuban who's never been stopped. And you see that he still had that beast in him, even though he went through those things outside the ring. Now he's been off for I think a year and a half. Can't remember how long he's been off. But for him to take this fight now, you know, this is the reason why some people are picking Crawford is because of the time off and because of all the antics outside the ring. Plus, he tends to balloon up between weight. So is those things going to hurt him? We'll find out July 29th.
That's a thick onion, man, that peel back the layers. It's a big fight. On my end, it's like, is Crawford, is this the fight where he gets caught? Is he, I mean, because you don't know a fighter's old until they lose. It's like you can pick him, and then they fall off a cliff. Is Crawford that good or disciplined in his offseason that he's not necessarily, what is he, 37?
34.
No, Crawford?
He's only Spence is 32.
Crawford's only 34? 35. Okay, so then, all right. So then he's still in his prime. And is Crawford the type of guy that is disciplined in his off seasons?
I've never seen him out of shape. I've never seen this guy out of shape. Never. There's a video a few years ago where Crawford is kind of calling him out. They're kind of going at each other with words. And he points to his stomach. Like, he points to Spence's stomach. He said, "You fat." You know, and then he goes, "No, I'm," and then he pulls up his shirt. He's like, "I'm not fat. Look at," you know, like showing off his six pack. You know, kind of showing off that he stays in shape. And I've never seen Crawford out of shape. No. So, like I said, this is a guy who outside the ring, yes, he's had a few hiccups. I mean, I think he got shot in the head before his fifth professional fight.
Wait, shot?
Crawford got shot in a. He was hanging out with some buddies. I don't remember the full story, but he got kind of, I think the bullet just kind of hit him and came up, didn't really go into his head like that.
Jeez.
But he did get shot and it kind of woke him up. And after that he had a child also, and he kind of changed his ways after that. But he's a guy who stays in shape, who stays in the gym. You never really see him out of shape. And you know, look, this is one fight that I could be wrong. Anybody can be wrong. Because you're talking about two guys who are dogs, who are not trying to lose at all costs. So it's not going to be an easy fight for either guy to win. You understand? When I'm picking Crawford, it's because of a hunch. But, man, this is one of those fights that anybody can be wrong, man. It's that close and it's that competitive of a fight.
Okay, then, without picking a fighter necessarily or kind of overcasting, do you believe this fight will have the intensity and the action as much as Lomachenko and Haney? Or is this going to be
a different type of fight?
To the chest,
it's a different type of fight because these are guys who will go after it. You know, not either guy is super defensive, right? Even though they have good defense, they have great boxing fundamentals. I mean, Crawford does a little bit more than Spence. Spence is very consistent. He has a very good jab. He keeps his guard up pretty high. He doesn't really get hit a lot. He puts constant pressure on you, and he hits you from all angles. He's a combination puncher. He doesn't stop. He just keeps coming, right? He's a good body puncher. He has a very good jab. Both guys have great jabs. So you're talking about two high-level chessmen going against each other. And they're not trying to play chess. That's the point. These guys are going to try to outdo another. And that's what makes this fight compelling. You know, I mean, this fight should be bigger than Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. But, of course, you know, hype beats substance sometimes. So, yeah.
Will there be a stoppage?
Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. Neither guy has been stopped. But it could happen. These guys do have a lot of knockouts on their record. I mean, Spence just got a stoppage against Ugas. It was a TKO, of course, because his eye was brutally swollen. But yeah, it is, you know, they're going to come to put punishment on each other. And like I said, this fight is one of those fights that is a throwback fight in a way, because we're used to seeing one guy be that much better than the other guy. And then he just outboxes him for 12 rounds or beats him up, knocks him out, and the fight is over. That's what we've been accustomed to lately in boxing. But this fight here, this fight is putting two guys who never lost and are still in their prime. I mean, yeah, they're reaching the end of their prime probably, but they haven't shown any deterioration. They haven't shown they don't look like they're losing their skill sets. They still look like to be in the prime of their career so far, and that's what we're waiting to see. I know some people were like, "Oh, this fight happened a little bit too late," but
no.
Where is the evidence of that? So.
I agree. I agree with everything you're saying, man. Again, we're being joined by Francisco Guzman of Boxeo Mundial, MMA Mundial. Follow him on a soon-to-be Twitter handle, possibly the real Frankie Knuckles or Frankie Knuckles Real. Whatever. We'll figure it out. But
It's coming.
Is this the fight of the year, Crawford-Spence?
It could be. If I'd be surprised if it disappoints.
Okay.
I would be very surprised if you get these two guys who just stand in front of each other and don't take any control of the fight. I would very, you know, if these guys just played it safe, I would be, I don't think anybody's expecting that.
With two tacticians or two chessmen, as you said, it's like, that's why I felt like Haney woke something up in Lomachenko, which brought the fire to that fight. With these, I feel like these guys, like, it's nobody's gonna really, it's gonna be so close that we need like 15 rounds or we need a trilogy. Like, it won't be enough. But I'm excited for it. I mean, I think the UFC is on the same exact night. You're gonna have like some you didn't say the nursing home. You said like the retirement card or something. I love
that. Well, yeah, well, we were talking about all the fighters that are fighting on the undercard.
I think you're gonna have some deaths on the MMA side of combat sports that night, and on the other side of boxing, you're gonna have like two fencemen, like a clean cut might win it. Like, it's gonna be a tight fight, but on the other side, you got Gaethje and Poirier, just two guys ready to like
pull
themselves up. Like,
that's part two. Yes,
there will be blood in the UFC's cage. No, I can predict that. That night is gonna be blood, like no doubt about it. But
for sure,
will there be blood October 28th? Because it was just announced, and for this fight, Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou. I really, 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 really want to wait till we see them facing off, because Tyson Fury, he does have a past, though he has cleaned it up a lot. Francis Ngannou is coming off a major knee injury, and the first fight he is going to fight is one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. Like, what? You can't just build it off some slackadaisical PFL fighter, some lower-ranked boxing heavyweight. I will believe it when it happens, but for you, Mr. Francisco Guzman, what's your first impressions, early thoughts of Fury and Ngannou?
You know, of course, this is just a spectacle fight. You know, we all 100%. Know what this is. But I will say this much, okay? I mean, we're probably going to look back at this, because one thing I will say, I don't expect Ngannou to win, not even by a long shot. But we know Ngannou hits like a mule. And if Tyson Fury takes him lightly in any way and gives Francis Ngannou a slight of a chance to put those hands on his chin, and he clips him really good, Tyson might not get up like he got up against Deontay Wilder. You understand? I mean, we saw how hard Francis Ngannou hits. I think they did some like pressure gauge where he hit. Well, I don't know what he hit, but it was
slightly
like
slightly harder than you, right? Only slightly harder than you, right?
800 pounds of pressure, dude. I mean, it was like this guy hits like a tank truck, you know. Like, I know Tyson has the boxing abilities to make this a winnable fight for himself, but if you give Ngannou just one chance to put his hands on you, which is a puncher's chance, Ngannou will sleep you, man. So if that happens, I mean, I know this is not a for a title fight. They're giving Tyson Fury a pass for it. But if he knocks out Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou is going to be a king. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Nobody's done it. You know, nobody's beating a boxer. I mean, you know, we saw Conor McGregor try to do it. You know what I'm saying? We see Jake Paul beating up, you know, Tyron Woodley, and and you know, all these other guys that he's fought. He's fighting Nate Diaz now. So yeah, this is gonna be, this is interesting because I don't give Ngannou a chance, but I do give him a puncher's chance.
To say the least, it is 100% interesting. It is a spectacle. It's one of those Muhammad Ali, Aoki. I believe that's not the DJ.
Yeah, yeah.
There was like a catch wrestler that they did at like Shea Stadium, I believe, many, many, many decades ago. Man, I've said this to you several times that I see Francis Ngannou as like, I mean, you crowned it. He is a king, man. He's carries himself like a how a human being should. Like he speaks softly. He competes like an animal. Like he is a great champion, a great spokesperson. He speaks multiple languages. His story is epic. And yet, the guy who's had tendencies to kind of be insecure in his past, Mr. Dana White, of course they clash heads. But yet, of course, Dana White is buddy-buddy with this drunk Irish whiskey salesman who, I don't, this guy has, if Francis Ngannou had one of these 10 allegations that Conor McGregor had, they would just disparage him, that TMZ and Dana White would form an alliance to take down Francis Ngannou's reputation. Like, Francis Ngannou truly is just how he's a fighter's fighter. He's a champion's champion. Like, and like you said, man, if he wins, he will capture the world. Everybody will know his name on planet Earth if he beats Tyson Fury.
Oh, for sure, because nobody's expected him to win, and it will be, you know, it will be like a Cinderella story in a way where.
Yeah.
You know, he leaves the UFC. Now he's making more money than he's ever made in his whole entire career. And he's looking to make more money. I think it was $8 million that he's supposed to make off the top, plus other ways, other maybe pay-per-view buys or whatever. But now he beats, let's say it does happen, he knocks out Tyson Fury. Now we have maybe a rematch down the line, and then he makes even more money. He walks away from MMA much richer than he came in.
Wow.
It's insane.
And it's like he would hold court. He could start a Francis Ngannou promotion. He could team up with the promotion, and it's like he could be the correspondent or ambassador, like, for Africa. African boxing, African MMA, like, hell yeah, let's go, Francis. Like, dude, I think – now, learning about how you predict and see fights, I'm learning here. Is Tyson Fury going to underestimate Francis Ngannou? It's on the table. It's a possibility.
We've seen Fury hit the canvas, okay, against Steve Cunningham, which is a smaller fighter. He got dropped. And against Deontay Wilder in the first fight, you know, it was life and death, right? And then in the third fight, he got dropped also twice. He's shown the ability to recover, that he has shown. But Ngannou hits. We saw Ngannou hit, you know, Alistair Overeem and nearly knock his head right off his body. I mean, this guy hits really hard. So Tyson Fury needs to go in there and take care of business, because if he takes him lightly and tries to toy with Francis, all Francis has to do is put one hand on him, a good one, and that's it. So that's the only thing that I'm seeing here, is that Ngannou, even though win or lose, if he's able to make the fight competitive or even hurt Tyson Fury or put him out, he's won the lottery, I would say.
And my final thing with this, have we heard? I've seen some things were being released with the purses. Francis Ngannou getting $8 million is great. He should get 15, man. Give Fury 25, give Ngannou 15. A little more than 8. Come on. It's going to be freaking
massive. He's going to make more. He's going to make more than that. I heard numbers like 20 million, 30 million. I mean, I heard some big numbers, yeah.
Okay. Numbers aside, let's talk the tech.
I mean, he got $600,000 for his last fight.
Yeah. Great point. Great point. Holy moly. 1.2 million would be doubling it. Holy moly. Great point.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Do we know any of the equipment? Is this going to be in a ring? Is it going to be in a cage? Is it going to be in like a karate,
I don't know the particulars.
Circle?
I really don't know the particulars yet. I know it's going to be, I think, in Saudi Arabia.
Okay. You
know? So, but I don't know the particulars yet.
You said the word king, man. They are going to be treated like
sultans. Oh, yeah.
Over there.
Saudis are trying to take over.
Oh, my. To kind of sidetrack, because it wouldn't be an octagon without a sidetrack question. do you see the Saudis being real players in combat sports? I know they have the Abu Dhabi deal, the Emirates with UFC, but I can't think of any more boxing stuff.
Well, they signed. They signed Usyk. Usyk signed to a Saudi Arabian. Yeah, I can't remember the organization, but yeah, they're in the mix. These guys.
They could be a player. Do you have?
Oh yeah. Didn't I send you something on? They had they offered. They had some. No, they owned part of the PGA or something like that. They're PGA. You know, some of these
I've seen that.
Yeah, some of these golf players, they had a golf organization that now merged with the PGA. Yeah. And they also have soccer teams and all that stuff. These guys are trillionaires, bro. You know? These guys are buying up stuff.
And imagine if they paid in like another universe, because obviously Dana and Connor are buddy-buddy, but say following Floyd Connor, 2017, Connor and Dana do not get along. Say all of a sudden Nate Diaz has been sitting on the sideline. If we were 2017, I could totally see the Saudi combat sports organization sliding in there and, like, offering those guys, like, $75 million each. Connor and Nate, 3, like, 6 years ago. Imagine, like, right? Do you think that's the – could that fighter take Dana White to court and be like, what do you – you guys are telling me I have to – continue this 50-50 contract or $2 million contract, whatever the freaking the Nate Diaz was on, which was not $1 million contract. Maybe he may crack the million, but
right.
Tell me if the Saudis are throwing $50 million, the judge is gonna say nope, you got to stick to your contract. Like, some way, somehow, the fighters will get paid in the UFC. Somehow, it's gonna happen. I don't know how.
Well, is the reason why UFC fighters are going to other organizations like the PFL and one championship, and then you got also some of these guys taking these boxing matches. Yeah, they're going to lose, you know, for the most part, but they're coming home with $2 million.
We were on the phone the other day. You mentioned Woodley.
Yeah, Woodley, exactly. Woodley made $2 million even though he got knocked out against Jake Paul.
Dude, you make great points. Like, you're like he's tarnishing his career to get knocked out by freaking Jake Paul that's how much he did not make that he needed to take that fight on 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, man. It boxing is one of the oldest sports, and yet it's like, or combat. I mean, you can't lump MMA into boxing, but I mean, boxers get paid. I don't know what it's going to take for MMA guys to get paid.
So check this out. Usyk signed with a Saudi Arabian company called Skill Challenge Entertainment.
Skill Challenge. Okay.
So, they're trying to hopefully see if they can get. Usyk is fighting. He's got a fight with this guy, DeBoss. I can't really get his name right, but yeah, he's got a fight coming up. But if he wins that, which he should, then I guess after Tyson finishes his circus melee with Francis Ngannou and doesn't get knocked out, then I guess they could. I mean, they're still going to make that fight anyway, because they should, because it's not for a title. This fight is not for a title. So
the fact that they put together this fight so fast, Ngannou, Fury, and it's like, I don't think people understand how slow combat sports negotiations take. The fact that they put that fight together so fast, it tells me that Fury he wanted to dance, like he wanted to have fun, spice it up. Like, the promotion for this is gonna be fun. I think it's gonna, as you said, gonna be a spectacle. Maybe Usyk is just a little boring for him. It's like it's not worth
it.
Well,
Usyk, you know, is heavyweight champion. I believe he has 2 or 3 belts.
Okay, that's appealing.
You know, the point is that that's actually the biggest fight for Tyson Fury. You know, and the most challenging.
Whoa! In terms of what? In terms of what? The biggest.
What do you
fight?
Mean?
You think eyeballs?
Yeah, of course.
No way.
Yeah, for sure.
No
for sure.
Way.
The only other fighter that could put that would be big or maybe bigger is Anthony Joshua.
This is the clip. This is the clip. This is the social media clip. Francisco Guzman of Boxeo Mundial and MMA Mundial believes that Francis Ngannou versus Tyson Fury does less pay-per-views than Tyson Fury versus Oleksandr Usyk. Oleksandr, I guarantee you people do not know his first name.
Well, I'm not looking. I didn't say that. I said that it was the biggest fight for Tyson Fury. Meaning. I mean, if you take that to Wembley Stadium, that they'll fill that up for sure. For sure.
Okay. So no more social media clip here. the
catchy. I mean, we don't know what this Ngannou thing is going to do. You understand? We're expecting it to be a big, you know, because Tyson Fury, of course, is going to talk his smack. Francis Ngannou doesn't really talk much, but that they paint him as King Kong, which is not hard to do. All you got to do is put Francis Ngannou's knockouts, you know, and splash it all over people's faces, and they're going to come.
Are they allowed to use the footage, or can they only show, like,
still shots? Oh, right, because it is UFC footage. Hey, who knows? Let's see.
Weird, right? I guarantee. And I'm trying to remember the order of this. Was the next fight we're going to talk about, John Jones Stipe, was that booked after Fury and Ngannou?
I think before.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, like, Dana White, that's the very competitive nature of him. But spoiler alert, the next matchup that Francisco and I are going to talk about is John Jones. There's something going on with the timeline here, October 28th, November 11th. There is some gamesmanship between promotions, I believe. But John Jones versus Stipe Miocic, the greatest heavyweight champion of all time in Stipe, the greatest light heavyweight champion of all time, steroids, will be under the MSG roof November 11th. Hopefully, Francisco and I will be there. I'm extremely pumped for this fight, man. Like, more pumped than John Jones is in the workout room. More pumped than he gets up. It's an extremely fun fight. But I think we see John Jones edging this out. They're going to paint this is the greatest heavyweight of all time. John Jones faces him. But it's like it's a couple of years past for Stipe. Anybody who's questioning Crawford versus Spence's, like how many miles they have left in the tank, those same people would say then that Stipe is like dead, shot, and dragged around the shed, like in terms of years, because he's had many, many wars.
He sure has. But he's, you know, he's still in my eyes, might still be competitive enough to make this fight interesting. You know, we saw John Jones beat Cyril Gane, and that might be a gift and a curse at the same time, because it wasn't much of a fight,
right?
Ended really quickly. Right. It was a super easy fight for John Jones. We thought it would. I mean, some of us, I picked against Jones. I thought Gane was gonna put up more of a fight than he did. Now Stipe is a much more accomplished heavyweight than Cyril Gane is, for sure. And we've seen Stipe go through adversity. I mean, yes, he got stopped by Francis Ngannou, but that's Francis Ngannou, you know? And he gave Francis Ngannou's first loss, remember that? In a fight that we thought he was going to lose. I mean, he was getting lumped up in that fight before he turned it around and started taking him down and took the fight away from him. But I will say this much. I don't expect him to beat John Jones, but he may show us where John Jones really is, because I believe he's going to put up more of a fight than Cyril Gane did, for sure.
I look at it as John versus John. Like, if he finishes Stipe in the first round, it's like, okay, all right, maybe he is something at heavyweight. But we all think he's going to win. So my point is, how does he win? How fast does he win? Like, you have to – we really have to critique John Jones to that degree, because this is not Francis Ngannou. This is not – I mean, that's really it. That's really it, his competition.
The heavyweight division has never really been stacked anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So if John Jones has a brutal five-round decision win, it's like, oh, I give credit to Stipe for that. But if John Jones goes out there and finishes him in 90 seconds, 2 minutes, it's like, all right, John Jones, he can make some noise at heavyweight.
Yeah, if he beats Stipe that easy, like he beats Ciryl Gane, I mean, who do we have? I mean, he'll pretty much beat the rest of the roster that's out there, I believe. But I kind of think that I've slept on Stipe, especially when he fought DC. You know, when he fought DC the second time, I slept on him, and he turned that fight around, of course, and knocked out DC. Right? He's shown that he can adjust. And yes, he's been inactive. And yes, he might be past, of course, his prime or whatever.
I don't knock the inactivity. I think that's wise.
Yeah, the inactivity, of course, but
I think that's wise.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, but when you look at John Jones, he looked a little awkward, in my opinion, when he first started out against Ciryl Gane. I think that's why he immediately went to wrestling, right? He just didn't look like that sharpshooter that he usually is. And you're talking about 3 years, you know? And now he had a fight that didn't even last one round, right? So is he back in the gym, or is he just, you know, just chilling? You know, and hanging out, because that's what I've been seeing. I haven't really been seeing anything else. Is he trying to improve furthermore because of the 3 years and because that fight didn't last too long? Because if he's just enjoying the fruits of his labor and thinks that he's just going to come and run over Stipe, he might be biting more than he can chew. So, I mean, this is really going to tell us where John Jones, in my opinion, where he's truly at. After, you know, a layoff, and is he now the greatest heavyweight of all time, if anything, because that's what he could be called if he runs through the division, not only the greatest light heavyweight, but the greatest heavyweight and the greatest of all time, because he hasn't been beaten.
Who has a better chance of winning, Miocic or Ngannou?
I'd say Ngannou. Because Ngannou showed he was a different fighter when he fought Miocic the second time, right? He stuffed the takedowns, you know what I'm saying? And he was able to control Stipe from doing anything. I think that Ngannou, I mean, Ngannou has been off for quite a bit and was severely injured in that Ciryl Gane fight. He's had some surgeries. So we really don't know how much if those injuries have taken something away from him, you know, not making him that monster that he usually is. You know? And he's gotten better as a fighter, that I will say, but he's been off for a while too, so who knows.
And would you agree with this, that Ngannou should just stay away from the weights? Any, like, powerlifting, off-season power, like, he should just immediately just kind of, like,
yeah, I don't. He's strong. He's physically a big guy. Why does he need more muscle?
Right.
What he does need is skill. He needs to better his skill. Better. He's shown a different skill set in the second fight. That's what I think threw Stipe off, because Stipe couldn't get off at all. You understand? Now when he fought Ciryl Gane, what I saw was that. He knew he wasn't that guy. He was severely injured, but he found a way to win. You understand? I mean, that showed me that he was in a different place. He was getting to a different place as a fighter, you know, because to be that severely injured and still win against a guy who was...
That's hard, man.
Obviously, yeah, you know. So you have to... Francis Ngannou is shown improvement from his first loss to Stipe Miocic, for sure.
My dream fight would be John Jones, Francis Ngannou. I think it's 3 years left on the maybe 2.5 or 3.5 years left on the ESPN deal. If, like, the final November in MSG, you get John Jones versus Francis Ngannou, like, they both, like, and just Francis, like, just puts John away. His first loss retires John and gets on the mic and just wins everybody over, man. It could happen. It could happen. I don't know how. I don't know when. But you never know in this crazy sports that we love to cover and learn about. And some of the people, we got a few minutes left. Again, we're being joined by Francisco Guzman of Boxeo Mundial and MMA Mundial. And some of the MMA members from which we have been to events with, hung out with, no, they follow us, we follow them. It's an interesting circle, and I like to peel back the curtain. I've had good experiences with the top dogs, very poor experiences with the top dogs, and it's interesting. It turns into high school when you're at these media scrums, and especially when it's lunchtime and they're serving out free sandwiches, and it's like everybody rushes to the lunch line. It's hysterical. That's why it's like, Francisco, I'm trying to get him to come to Boston with me. It's like, man, we are the crew now, rolling out to these events. If I don't catch Francisco,
what a dynamic duo!
Dynamic duo. We'll definitely we'll kill it at MSG in November, or maybe a boxing match before then at MSG or Barclays or something. But
yeah,
let me start. I'm gonna throw out media member names, and I want you to tell me your favorite part about them and your worst or least favorite part about them. Let me start. Errol Hawani, informative journalist, extremely well-spoken, carries himself like a classy professional. I'm sure he writes beautiful emails. I'm sure he can speak the corporate talk like no other. Okay, that's the good traits. The bad traits, man, does he instigate these fighters to get to say shit about contracts or about the promoter, and it's like, it drives me nuts. And some of the fighters have caught wind of his style, and they're like, Ariel, I'm not going to say that, but the younger, less experienced, more less media-savvy fighters, they get warped into his spell. So, yeah, I love the way he conducts himself as a professional in the corporate world, but when it comes to stirring the pot, he's there's nobody in the kitchen that stirs the pot like Errol Hawani. So what are your thoughts on
Mr. Ariel, the nose?
The nose, yes.
You know, look, he's trying to make a living. I mean, and not only is he trying to make a living, but, you know, he had that little fallout with Dana White. You know, Dana White, you know, whenever he speaks of Ariel Hawani,
he does try to bully him.
He bullies the crap out of Ariel. So it's Ariel's way of fighting back. You know, he talks about, you know, fighters' pay and all the other stuff that is going on with mixed martial arts that we all know about, some of us know about. So he's, you know, I don't really have any – I think he's a cool dude, honestly. I think he's just, you know, he's still here, right? He's one of the first guys to really cover the sport the way he has. And he's got his own audience, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of the fighters like him, you know, and I think that, you know, it's easy to pick on him sometimes because he's just not a tough guy. And when he tries to be tough, it's like, dude, stay in your lane, you know, because it's not a tough bone in him. You know, even though I wouldn't underestimate anybody, you know, you never know.
No,
but you know, Ariel Hawani, just he's a peaceful guy. You know, he's really not trying to step on any toes. He does, you know, talk a little bit sometimes, and you know, he might get himself a little bit of trouble. But you know,
he reminds me of my brother in the sense that, like, if I needed somebody to defend me, like for something like that court speak, like, I'm calling Errol Hawani. Like, dude, I might get myself in more trouble for opening my mouth, which has happened. Like, Errol Hawani, court speak, hell yeah. And exactly. I think you landed on something, like something that nobody has talked about. I've heard Brendan Schaub, Joe Rogan, they broke down the Helwani versus UFC or Helwani versus Dana White relationship. I think you landed on something, and I'm going to forever use it, because if Dana White did not bully Helwani, maybe Helwani would go more lightly on the questions or try to, like, pull, like, fish for, like, some info to kind of badger Dana White, piss off Dana White, poke the bear. Maybe if Dana White, maybe it's like the cause and effect type of thing. Maybe if Dana White wasn't picking on him as much, like a high school freaking cafeteria, maybe Helwani would go easier on him. So that's a great point.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't ask himself questions like some of the media do. But
imagine if they got along. Like, when's the last time Helwani? Dana White does more interviews with the schmo than a guy who's like the face of MMA media. That doesn't make sense. Dana White's so willing to give.
You saw what happened with the schmo recently.
Okay, so that'll be the next guy. I'll start with the schmo then. Okay. What I love is his passion for the character. Okay, he doesn't turn it off. It's a great shtick. He is balls deep in the combat sports career. You know, he's married into it. Him and his wife both cover it. Highly respected.
Are they married?
I believe so. If not, pop the question, Schmo. What are you doing? they travel together. They cover the event together. He's been on the mats. He seems like he's physically in shape. I do respect that side of him. Okay. Now the don'ts. Have a feel for when it's the right or wrong time to ask a crazy question in your character, okay? And two, that's it. I don't know. I enjoy him. It doesn't bother me. I get it.
Well, it doesn't bother me either. I mean, you know, I don't have nothing negative to say. I'm just saying, when you get a little bit close to Dana White and you start, you know, kind of feeling that you're in a good space because
100%
you shared the same room with him, Dana will let you know.
In studio with the schmo, I saw.
Yeah, exactly. But we saw what happened with Ariel, right? Ariel was Dana White's, you know, he was good with Dana White, right? And then as soon as he did one wrong thing, Dana shut him down. And that's what the schmo is learning right now. He's learning. If he's learning that Dana, you gotta tread lightly when it comes to Dana, because you do one wrong thing, Dana will shit on you every chance he gets, you know. So yeah, and that little situation with the whole WWE throwing the chair over somebody's head, who is he asking that to? I don't remember.
Dana, but, or Kevin Holland. If you could take
Holland,
a chair
yes.
to somebody's skull, who would it be? And even Kevin Holland's like, you sure you want to ask me that question, man?
That was hilarious. Gosh.
Okay, another name.
Dana just spazzed out.
Luke Thomas, I highly respect. He's an aristocrat. I feel like his father's 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 father was part one of the founding fathers. Like, I could see him, like, Luke Thomas is a white wig wearing, like, judge, diplomatic, aristocratic, well-spoken dude who you want him to be a lawyer or a football coach. Like, he has that type of persona. What I can't stand is I hinted at this earlier, how Francisco can admit if he's wrong on something. I'm giving Francisco credit for completely being wrong on Volkanovski. Luke Thomas is a guy that I feel I don't know if maybe only his family members could get him to admit that he said something wrong. Like, you can't find a clip of Luke saying, "I was completely wrong on that." You'll never hear it. And to me, that's an ego thing. But so that's my take on Luke. Again, I respect him. This guy could run for governor, run for a politician. Like, that takes a lot of energy to be that type of cleaned up personality. But again, like a politician, they'll never admit they're wrong.
Yeah. Luke sounds, how can I say? I like to listen to his show, you know, I like to hear what he's got to say and what he thinks. And sometimes when he breaks down fights, I'm like, okay, you know, that kind of surprised me when I seen him breaking down fights, because I didn't think, I don't know, he sometimes cuts a little bit too long trying to show, oh, this is going to happen. And you're sitting there, okay, let it happen already. Like, yeah, you're like sitting there like, okay, what is it you're talking about? But I will say this much, you know, I don't see any harm in listening to him. You know what I'm saying? But I don't really got much to say.
Yeah, all these guys are harmless. Again,
I watch his show sometimes just to listen to what he has to say, but I don't have anything real negative to say about the guy, no.
I don't know what it is. Since I've become a father, it's like I feel like I'm trying to carry myself like a father. Like I don't think I'm going to wear a zebra blazer out to one of these events. Like I really, and I think the turning point was I was so close to like buzzing a mohawk at the Newark event, but the fact that I didn't do that, it's like that's where I'm at now. I'll dress snazzy, but I'm just keep it.
That would have been interesting.
Keep it clean. Try to conduct myself like a father. Have fun, and it's like I don't know. It's just Francisco, you're the man. I enjoy hanging out with you, man. I enjoy speaking with you.
Hey, I'm kind of glad you're there when I get there. I'm like,
are you
shit.
Coming to Boston?
I'm thinking about it, man. Not 100% because I think I have to do something that weekend. That's the only thing that's kind of halting me from going.
Would you go to the PFL the night before at MSG?
PFL the night before, really?
Yep, August 18th.
I'll put in for it. August 18th, I'll put in for it.
All right. We got to connect, man. Any boxing matches coming up in the city?
Not that I know of.
No. They always squeeze in a card. Tomorrow. Like, oh, Teofimo's fighting?
Teofimo just, he just had a fight.
Always, though. But, like, I'll find out the week of. I'm like, oh, man, he's at MSG?
Oh, yeah, he fought at the theater.
Let me know, man. Let me know. If there's any, you gave a great website to me, fightnews.com, their schedule. I like the way it's set up, very clean. They need to throw in the event. Or the location, but other than that, we got some great fights on the horizon. My man,
fight schedules on that. Yeah,
they even got Jake Paul versus Nate Diaz on that, showing them respect. And by the way, I just realized I've talked to you over and over and over that I think Dana White is ridiculous how childish he is versus Jake Paul. Like Jake's is a child, like, but for Dana White to stoop to his level, like it shouldn't happen. Dude, they're in business. The UFC's in business with the Pauls. Like, they have those prime drinks.
He's been on his podcast. He's been on his brother's podcast.
Yeah, I'm
bro.
Like, man, I'm the biggest idiot to think that there's, like, he's some WWE about, he's talking rivalry. About
his brother was asking, you know, to he wanted to fight in the UFC.
Dude, so. They had me fooled. And I'm, like, a freaking educated, like, combat sports consumer. And they still had me fooled. Then I go, wait a second. Prime?
I mean, Dana is trying to make the Elon Musk and Zuckerberg fight. I mean, come on.
That's so ridiculous.
Dana says, oh, these things are ridiculous, but then he puts it together. Like, come on. He contradicts himself.
I don't want to hear that a Tesla is having a problem and then the owner of Tesla is getting training for a cage.
I will say this much. Have you seen Zuckerberg, bro, with Adesanya and Volkanovski?
He's in good
shape.
He's been
training with those guys? Have you seen it? Dude, he's got abs and shit. He's like, he's looking like a fighter.
He was a collegiate athlete.
I mean, that could be TRT. Just remember.
Dude, he was a collegiate athlete. I know it was rowing.
He was? Really?
I know it was rowing.
Oh, it was rowing.
But he was a collegiate athlete. You cannot take that away from
him. Hey, man. I don't know, man. And I know a lot of people now, since they haven't seen Elon Musk, I think Elon Musk is in the lab right now. He's concocting his Tesla, you know, body and shit.
As you know, though, but the truth is always revealed on fight night. So as long as like Zuckerberg is doing the right thing, he'll win. Like, I feel like Elon Musk will be on TRT.
I'm going to tell you, we don't know. We haven't seen Elon Musk and what he's doing. He's been out of the limelight. He hasn't really, you know, I don't know, man.
I guarantee you he's going to look great.
You think so?
Yeah. Physically, yeah. He's going to put out a photo. I heard Jake Gyllenhaal got like abs inserted for a movie. Like those type of psychos, like Elon Musk might get like a freaking fake abs.
Jake Gyllenhaal didn't get abs inserted. Those were his abs.
The Southpaw abs? No.
Yeah, those were his abs. He was in shape. This guy didn't look ridiculous. I didn't think he looked
I think it was pre-iPhone for me. So it's like one of those like word of mouth type of facts.
It could be, like I said, it could be some TRT, you know? I mean, who knows? But
well,
but he looked to be in shape. So I'm not going to say the abs look real. They did look real. I mean, Oscar De La Hoya is pulling some inserted abs.
Yes. So my point is Elon Musk. I wouldn't put that past him. I don't think he's above that type of thing. Like my wife says he's had plastic surgery. I go, really? And she goes, yeah, look at his face.
Yeah, I kind of see that.
Well, Francisco, always a great time.
Always, brother.
I appreciate it, my man. I'm sure we will talk before week's end. Always fight news. I do appreciate it. Oof. Have you settled on a Twitter handle?
I believe my Twitter head is gonna be either real Frankie Knuckles or the real Frankie Knuckles. If somebody doesn't have it yet.
I'm gonna lock those down. I'm gonna make a burner account. I'm gonna tweet at Kawani, Luke Thomas, Dana White. Tell them all to go F themselves. Like, it's not Ike, it's Frankie Knuckles. Like, you have your IP address. I'm like, shit. Well, Frankie, I'm gonna throw you out of the stream. I do appreciate it.
All right, brother.
I'll talk to you soon, my brother.
All right, man. Peace.
Love you guys. Hope you enjoyed the episode.